Preface to the 1989 edition. Black theology and black power was the product of the civil rights and black power movements in America during the 1960s, reflecting both their strengths and weaknesses. As an example of their strengths, this book was my initial attempt to identify liberation as the heart of the Christian gospel and blackness as the primary mode of God's presence. I wanted to speak on behalf of the voiceless black masses in the name of Jesus, whose gospel I believed had been greatly distorted by the preaching and theology of white churches. Although Martin Luther King Jr. and other civil rights activists did much to rescue the gospel from the heresy of white churches by demonstrating its life-giving power in the black freedom movement, they did not liberate Christianity from its cultural bondage to white Euro-American values. Unfortunately, even African-American churches had deviated from their own liberating heritage through an uncritical imitation of the white denominations from which they separated. Thus, it was hard to distinguish between the theologies of white and black churches and the images of God and Jesus they used to express them. African-Americans, it seemed to me at the time, had assumed that the whites did not treat them right. There was nothing wrong with whites thinking about God. It was the challenging and angry voice of Malcolm X that shook me out of my theological complacency. "Christianity is the white man's religion," he proclaimed again and again as he urged African Americans to adopt a perspective on God that was derived from their own cultural history. He argued, "Brothers and sisters, the white man has brainwashed us black people to fasten our gaze upon a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus. We're worshiping a Jesus that doesn't even look like us." Oh, yes. Now, just think of this. The blonde-haired, blue-eyed white man has taught you and me to worship a white Jesus and to shout and sing and pray to this God that's his God, the white man's God. The white man has taught us to shout and sing and pray until we die, to wait until death for some dreamy heaven in the hereafter, when we're dead. While this white man has his milk and honey in the streets paved with golden dollars here on this earth. Since I was, like many African-American ministers, a devout follower of Martin King, I tried initially to ignore Malcolm's cogent cultural critique of the Christianity as it was taught and practiced in black and white churches. I did not want him to disturb the theological certainties that I had learned in graduate school. But with the urban unrest in the cities and the rise of black power during the James Meredith March in Mississippi, June 1966, I could no longer ignore Malcolm's devastating criticisms of Christianity, particularly as they were being expressed in the articulate and passionate voices of Stokely Carmichael, Ron Karenga, the Black Panthers, and other young African-American activists. For me, the burning theological question was, how can I reconcile Christianity and black power, Martin Luther King Jr.'s idea of nonviolence, and Malcolm X's, by any means necessary, philosophy? The writing of Black Theology and Black Power was the beginning of my search for a resolution of that dilemma. Consider within the socio-political context of the 60s. I still believe that my answer was correct. Christianity is black power. Since theology is human speech and not God speaking, I recognize today, as I did then, that all attempts to speak about ultimate reality are limited by the social history of the speaker. Thus, I would not use exactly the same language today to speak about God that I used 20 years ago. Times have changed, and the current situation demands a language appropriate for the problems we now face. But insofar as racism is still found in the churches and in society, theologians and preachers of the Christian gospel must make it unquestionably clear that the God of Moses and of Jesus makes an unqualified solidarity with the victims, empowering them to fight against injustice. As in 1969, I unfortunately still see today that most white and black churches alike have lost their way, enslaved to their own bureaucracies with the clergy and staff attending endless meetings and professional theologians reading learned papers to each other, seemingly for the exclusive purpose of advancing their professional careers. In view of the silence of the great majority of white theologians when faced with the realities of slavery and segregation, the white church's preoccupation